Hello and welcome to the 25th episode of the Touchline Fracker podcast. I'm your host Lewis, and on this landmark episode I'm joined by four fantastic guests. Before we start, I'd like to thank all of you listeners who have put up with us over the last 25 episodes. Our listener base is growing, so we must be doing something right. We appreciate all of your support and opinions, as well as the feedback we receive on the podcast, so feel free to leave a review on iTunes about the podcast, you know, drop us a message on Twitter, SoundCloud, YouTube, and of course let us know about any feedback you'd like to put to us. Anyway, that's enough of me rabbiting on. Let's go on to tonight's show. We'll be discussing how influential coaches are in the development of players. As I mentioned earlier, I am joined by four fantastic guests. I have Chelsea supporter Ife, Manchester United supporter Mariah, Gunnar Mickey, and Matt Whitehouse. Good evening, lads. So, Mickey, we'll start with you. What kind of coaching model is key to the development of young players?
For me, I was reading actually some good literature yesterday. The FA Licensed Coaches Club have a magazine called The Boot Room, and they have all kinds of articles and talking about coaching, grassroots, elite development, so on and so on. And basically, it was more of the younger they are, the more chaotic, the freedom you allow, so you put them in an environment where they develop their own decision making, and a lot of creative learning could go on. And as they get older, when the game becomes more competitive, the instructions you give are more specific, they're more purpose driven. So I'm kind of that school of thought, where there's a continuum as they get older, where you go from a more democratic coaching model to a more autocratic coaching model as they get older.
So you're pretty much like a hands-on approach in terms of working with the players on a one-to-one basis.
I'm more of a coach that I like to create an environment where they learn, and I ask questions. So for me, it's more about me posing them questions, whether it be verbally or literally on the field, and encourage problem solving, whether it be offensively or defensively, especially between the ages of 5 to 11. It's very, for me, I'm not a fan of actual coaching in that sense. I think the more specific coaching comes as they get older, where they need clear-cut, concise instructions.
Okay. Matt, obviously you're a professional coach. What is the model for you? Do you agree with much of what Mickey has said, or do you have your own sort of spin on things?
Aspect. I agree with players expressing themselves and playing games and being given the freedom to do things and express and try and be creative at a younger age. I wouldn't necessarily take that away from when they get older, though, personally. I think players still need to be given the freedom to try and express and try things without the fear of failure and fear of making mistakes. I think that's massive for youth players to feel confident in themselves. But for the younger players, though, I would say that I think you still need to, I wouldn't say coach, I'd say educate and nurture young talent, so teaching them, skill execution, technical development, trying to make them better with the ball. I've got a Curver coaching background, so I was big on technical skill development, and I do believe in that method to an extent. So obviously, developing the player's skill, ball mastery, technical development with their 1v1 moves, then the ability to put it into practice in games. And I'm a big fan of the 4v4 small-sided game programme, which will help them develop their skills in a proper game environment, which I know Man United's academy do through Rennie Milenstein, his influence there. As they move into the 12 to 16s, I do think that for English football, this is the bit that we suffer with the most. I think we've got some very good young players. I think we do a good job. I don't think we do a great job, but we do a good job. But I think we don't educate our players enough on the game. I think, when we're talking about coaching players' position specifically, I think we educate them on what their role is, but I don't think we give them a real intelligence about what we expect from them. And I think that shows, we spoke about Jack Wilshere before, I think game intelligence seems to be something that we lack more than other countries. I mean, the Dutch, the Germans, the Spanish, they've got a real intelligence to the game. Their decision-making, their tactical positioning, their movement, they just seem to be able to understand the game a lot more. And I think that comes down to how we coach our players and what we do. I met a Spanish coach recently who was surprised at how little 11v11 games we did with our players. We do a lot of kind of small-sided stuff, which I don't think is a bad thing for technical development, but actually to teach them the game, they actually might need to do more game realistic practices. It doesn't mean that we coach them, it just means that they understand their roles a bit more in that. And I don't think that we do that enough. And I think that as older players, I think we get a lot of good street players. You know, so when we play against players at maybe, you know, semi-pro level, we think, God, he could have been like a professional. What happened? But he doesn't actually understand the game. What he does is he kind of has more of a freeness. I've got good ball skills, but actually he doesn't seem to understand what he's supposed to be doing in possession, especially out of possession. I don't think we coach our players about defending half as much as we need to, you know, as a group. And I think these are the things that 12s to 16s we need to be doing a lot more of. But I do think that we need to really be giving our young players expression and creativity at a young age to really develop their technical skill levels so they are, you know, real ball players. And I don't think we have enough of them still.
Okay. Yeah, so Mariah, what would you say are the key skills needed and the right attributes needed by a top coach to be able to develop a top-class talent into a top-class player?
Are we talking about a technical, tactical aspect, or are we talking about from a mental aspect? Because I think we've had this discussion before on the timeline, but I think we're talking more about professional level, not about the youngsters. I think I'm a bit better at doing that because obviously I'm not a coach.
Yeah, yeah.
When I'm talking about a professional level, I think we're comparing, let's take, for example, Rooney. I'm sure we've debated this today. Death about how Rooney never became the player that he was meant to be, while Ronaldo's gone on to be one of the best ever. So for me, I feel it is more the individual that makes the difference, because when you think about it, they had the same environment, they were had access to the same facilities, the same coaches. So for what reason did Rooney not kick on and Ronaldo not? When they say, like, oh yeah, Sir Alex made Ronaldo blah blah blah, or Guardiola made Messi, I think what a coach does is they give a player that platform, and then what happens with that platform is that the player then decides to go on and, you know, make the most of what they've been given, or they can just waste away, man. And I just want to ask you guys, because you're both coaches, what your opinions are on that same subject as well, if you could elaborate a bit more for me.
Matt, do you want to take that first?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote an article on comparing Ronaldo and Rooney, and titled it A Lesson in Mindset. And I think Ronaldo's got, I don't know if it's Alex Ferguson's, but, like, you know, I think he's helped him. I think Carlos Queiroz helped him, but I think he's just got either an internal motivation or a drive and a desire to be the best. And I think he's kind of committed his whole self to it, so that he's just everything he's trying to improve on. And I think I compared the two, because I think Ronaldo, when he came to Manchester, struggled because he got a bit of flack, you know, he got a bit of criticism, he was a bit flash. And I think that helped him develop a stronger mindset, whereas Rooney was always the golden kid, you know. I don't think Rooney probably ever did anything wrong all the way up until his youth career, up until the pro, because he was always like the most dominant. And I think at some point, when you hit that wall, you know, where it's a struggle, I think Rooney did hit that at times. I don't think they've learned to kind of had coping, you know, mechanisms to deal with that, whereas I think Ronaldo had 3 years of difficulty at Manchester, but then because he kind of persevered and pushed through it, and he had the right mentality, he was a better person for it. He almost understood the importance of hard work, whereas I wonder if Rooney's ever understood actually it was hard work and not nature that made him the player he is, if you understand what I mean. I think Ronaldo's kind of had the mentality, and again, you compare it to Messi, imagine him as a young kid who was almost told that he was going to be too small to be a pro. It's almost like that gives you that mentality of, I'm going to do everything I can to become that. You know, almost that feeling of, I understand what it's like to kind of go through hardship. Michael Jordan's another example. He got cut, didn't he, in his high school team?
Yeah.
You know, he was told he wasn't good enough. So then he made him work harder and harder and harder to become better, to prove they're wrong, and then also to become a better player. Gerrard was rejected from the FA Lillishall thing. Other players were selected because he was too small at that time. And in his book, they came to play Liverpool's academy. And he said he was obsessing about it for days because he had to prove them wrong, prove how good he was. And apparently in that game, he was just frightening. Now, I'm critical of Gerrard in regards to maybe his tactical ability and his do-it-all kind of mentality. However, he had that kind of fire inside of him to kind of prove people wrong. And I think that mindset is what's defined Ronaldo to Rooney. I don't know if Rooney's ever really felt the need to kind of, I don't know, change people's perceptions of it, it seems, you know. But Ronaldo's just relentless, and that's why he's become the best player. And I think if you're looking at a player scouting wise, their personality and their mentality is the most fundamental, because I think that will push a player to to new levels more than just a nice, nice player, if you know what I mean.
Mickey, do you have any thoughts for Mariah's question?
Yeah, like, I mean, that just comes from, you know, the belief that are you someone with a fixed mindset or a growth mindset? I think it would be worth looking at a scientist, I think she was called Carol Dweck, or psychologist, and her work was based on, you know, people having this mentality that, okay, this is my level of ability, this is what it is, it's never going to be better, or it's never going to get worse, this is where I'm at. Whilst there's other people that tend to achieve more, have a growth mindset, which is, no matter how incompetent or competent I am at this particular skill, it can grow or it can regress. And I feel like most of the top players, almost just top performers, whether in any field, tend to have the latter. So I think that's just an example between Rooney and Ronaldo. And I would actually even use Messi to a certain example, especially between 2012 and 2014. I think he kind of fell, kind of regressed a bit. His numbers probably were maintained. In fact, they got better. But his overall play, the things that he did to facilitate Barcelona, as opposed to just score all the time for him, kind of went back a bit. And I think it may take the World Cup final to kind of get that spark back. I think, I don't know whether it's a case of Luis Enrique coming from the Barcelona background, being able to motivate him a little bit more, as to why Messi has looked a bit sharper, has looked a bit more hungrier. But I wouldn't be surprised if Messi would have a similar season that he had in 2010-2011, where it wasn't just the goals, it wasn't just the assists, it wasn't just the skills, but it was the overall contribution and the selflessness. I mean, it may be more of a systematic change with Barcelona currently, but Messi is much more involved in the build-up play, which some people kind of deride him for. People, when he isn't scoring, they say, oh, he plays too deep. I like it when he varies his play and isn't just standing around waiting for the ball to get to him. And if you just look at the amount of assists he's had for Neymar so far, it's been phenomenal. And I think the last league game that Barcelona had, he racked up a minimum of 3 assists or 2 goals. So, you know, even then, I think the World Cup final may have ignited that growth mindset in Messi again, where it's like, you know, you still have more to achieve. So you even see with the best players of our generation, even that still, that counts.
Ife, just talking about player development, you're always going to get the sort of nature versus nurture argument. So just in regards to Lionel Messi, what would you say to those who say Messi is more of a natural player, and in terms of coaches' influence,
do you mean naturally gifted,
yeah. So in terms of coaching influence, how far do you think that has gone?
Yeah, go on, man. My thoughts on that, because I think Messi almost defines the kind of perfect pathway of opportunity. So he's born in Argentina, where Diego Maradona is like their god. So that type of player is like synonymous with like being the best. So if you're a small player who's technically good, who's left-footed, you'll just kind of almost be favourite of people. He also then had his father, who was the coach. So whenever your dad's the coach of a team, you get a bit more freedom to go and play. So you watch those videos of him, and he was just running rings around players. You know, so. And then I looked another, I watched that Messi's greatest of him as well, and that his coach at that time as well gave him just a complete freedom to go and score goals, and then gave him like little, I think it was like every goal he scored, he gets like a biscuit that he loved or something like that, you know. But then he went to Barcelona, which was the perfect place for him to develop his skills. And what I mean by that is his whole development pathway has been almost perfect. And again, the knee or the growth hormone thing almost worked in his favour because of his mentality. But it might have also given him the extra boost physically, which maybe he wouldn't have got, which obviously people have questioned because, you know, he is a bit of a force of nature at times, which you do wonder, did those growth hormones impact that? However, what I mean is, if a young player in England is born who's small and left-footed, my point has always been that he just goes and plays left back, you know. So he's not really given the platform to go and express that a Lionel Messi would have, been born in the right country at the right time with the right kind of people to nurture him. And then that pathway almost has to be almost seamless to seem to get players to the top level. And it really does come down to opportunity. I mean, you get some players who are born 31st of August in England, and they will be denied a lot of opportunities because they are the last day of that year. Whereas if you're born 1st of September, your opportunities will be probably 100 times bigger, you know, because that day difference can completely change your kind of trajectory as a footballer because of the way the date birth bias works. So there's a lot of impacts that I think Messi's benefited from to become the player he is. Also, Guardiola coming in, you know, if Mourinho had come in, like I said before, I think Mourinho had come in, Messi wouldn't have become the player he was, because Guardiola completely put everything behind Messi and the team to become kind of Messi's team. Mourinho, I just don't think would have done that. I think he, like I said before, I think he would have just been like Hazard. Not a bad thing, but he's not regarded as the best player in the world. He would have just been a very good player, you know, whereas Guardiola turned him into the best ever. And so these opportunities, these kind of fortunes and looks have all just kind of worked in favour for Messi really well. I think his pathway has just been a really great example of what could happen if everything kind of fits together well, if you know what I mean.
Mickey, would you say that coaches have had a bigger influence over Ronaldo than they have Messi?
Yeah, because it's difficult to talk about natural ability because to a certain degree, how do you define it? I mean, a lot of people, when they talk about Ronaldo, they talk about his physique and whatnot, but I think to a certain degree, Messi is equally as athletic, but I think his athleticism is a bit more football specific in terms of agility, change of direction, acceleration, deceleration.
It's like opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, so I mean, with Ronaldo, I would say when we talk about his improvements in terms of his finishing, I mean, I don't know if it was Carlos Queiroz or Mullenstein, when I think it was Mullenstein, he was talking about the practices that he started to take part in the 2006 summer period, I think. We talk about his movement, and you know, there's a lot more coaches' input that we know about. But with Messi, there's not as much. So in comparison, you would say maybe Ronaldo had more. I always say, personally speaking, that even though I prefer Messi from an aesthetic and from an actual tactical point of view, I probably admire Ronaldo more because of the. He's an athlete in a sense. Like, if you talk to any regular football player, I think more would kind of idolise Ronaldo in a sense because it seems attainable. It seems like, okay, do you know what? I can go to the coach, I can go to the sports scientist, I can go to the dietitian, I can go to the YouTube. There's more to investigate and examine there. So, you know, a lot of the times you kind of talk about him as if, you know, he's the bionic man in a sense. So I would kind of lean towards the idea that the coaches have more of an input with Ronaldo. But it's still input, you know, on a foundation of incredibly supreme talent. It's not exactly like, you know, he was, I don't know, Tom Cleverley, and then, you know, he just worked really hard and became Cristiano Ronaldo, so.
Of course. Okay, let's leave the Ronaldo-Messi debate, because I'm sure we could all stay here for hours upon hours talking about Messi and Ronaldo. Let's just quickly go on to a bit of Wenger, but no Wenger bashing, please. A lot has been made of Wenger's techniques in terms of working with young players and just giving them a platform to really showcase their talent without giving them much instructions going out onto the pitch. Mariah, what's your thoughts on that method? Do you think that's admirable, or do you think it's or do you think that it's a flawed method in today's game?
In today's game, I would say it is definitely a flawed method, because I think nowadays, if you compare it to, like, before the point we were talking about how Ferguson knew his limitations and he brought in coaches who could make the difference tactically, at the highest level now, it's such a tactical game. Like, you can tell players like Mourinho's players go out there and they're well drilled. They know exactly what is required from them all the time. They know they can look up, they know when they're in the wrong position, where they need to drop back, where they need to go wide, where they need to be to receive the ball again. Guardiola, the same thing. Well drilled players tactically, they know where to be all the time. And those, we'll say those two are the best coaches in the world right now. And I think Patrick Vieira, he was talking about Arsene Wenger, and he said for a coach to give you that kind of faith, it's great, because you want to reward him, like thank him basically for giving you the faith, that trust in your ability to go out there and get the job done. But at the same time, you need somebody to rein you in and guide. You understand what I mean? So in this, I think back when Arsenal were dominating, it was a lot easier to just, you know, steamroll from the league. There was a big separation in quality from the top teams and the lower teams. It was like United and Arsenal were far and away the best, and then you had those guys who used to compete for a few years and then drop back. But now, when you can think of all the top coaches, there isn't one who isn't tactically very, very astute. So I think right now, that's why Arsenal are struggling so much, because that's the side of the game where Wenger doesn't really excel, to be honest with you. And I think it's affecting the team, affecting the whole club, really. So yeah, I definitely think his lack of tactical nous and his inability to pass it on to the players is affecting his club.
Matt, is there any situation with a young player where Wenger's methods could work in terms of producing the ultimate talent?
The ultimate talent, probably not, but a very good young player. Yeah, I think Wenger's suited to almost be a youth coach. You know, which sounds probably patronising, but it gives them a platform to express. It gives them the freedom to go and try things and. That's what a young player needs. You know, young players, like I said before, they do need to be educated in the game. But he's very much on a French, the French kind of old school. Clairefontaine Henry was developed on technique. You know, all it was about was improving the player's technique. And if you listen to Wenger, all he talks about is the player's technical aspects. You know, it's all about technique for him. And it seems to be that French group. You know, Hullier, I think Damian, one of the, and then Wenger, all seem to be very much in that. It's all about technique. Now, if you look at Henry and you look at where he's come and you look at his finish, it all comes from that technical work that he did as a young player at Clairefontaine. You can see that. However, you can argue, though, that his experience in Italy is what made him a better player, even though it maybe was a struggle at the time. I mean, I look at those three players who went to Italy, Bergkamp, Vieira and Henry, all struggled in Italy, but it's a very tactical game. And I'm sure that had an impact on them at some point. So when they came to England, the game probably felt easier and a little less chaotic. But they were able to put the technical stuff they did as a young player with the tactical stuff they did in Italy to then and then put it all into kind of practice at Arsenal, if you know what I mean. And I think Wenger's aspects is very much about technical and technique. And I do think there's a massive place for that. But I think that the tactical side cannot be neglected anymore. You know, I think young players are smarter now than they used to be. I don't think you have to, as much as you want to wait for players to get to 22, 23, 24, they need to be clued on now, you know, at 16, 17, 18. They need to go into games and be able to impact games and understand the game. So you demand on a young player a lot higher. I just wonder if Wenger, though, with his approach, does do well with developing youngsters, but then doesn't push them to the next level. Like you said about the ultimate talent, he won't develop an ultimate talent, Wenger, but he will definitely be a help for that player. You know, I look at Nasri, for instance, who I think has enhanced since going to Man City, because he's just in a better environment. He's got better players around him. He's got better coaching. He's at a top team. You know, if you look at Cesc Fabregas under Mourinho, And then obviously before Guardiola, he's going to be so much better than what he was under Wenger. However, his experience with Wenger would have helped him a lot. So Wenger's almost like the starting point for a lot of these young players to kind of give them the base, the experience, but then to push them to the ultimate bit, no. I don't think Wenger is actually an elite developer of top world-class talent. I think he is a part of it, if you understand what I mean.
Mm. So just to touching on that again, at what age do you think Wenger's skills, if you can say that, at what age group of players should they be used with, and where should that stop?
Well, Wenger, 17 to 21. I mean, if you look at, if Wenger was the under-21s coach, for instance, at Arsenal, he would be brilliant for them, you know, because I think that he would give them a great education. I think that they would improve. Again, it might look hypocritical because I criticise him for his tactical aspects, but he doesn't understand the game. He just doesn't have the kind of maybe willingness or the tactical insight that a Mourinho or a Guardiola has at the top level. But I think Wenger for 17 to 21 year olds has proven that he can push players to another level, you know, with a style that is maybe 4-3-3 or maybe Dutch based. It's important though that those players get the expression and freedom that he gives them, whereas a Mourinho coach at 17 to 21 would probably take quite a lot away from a player, which wouldn't help them to push on. I think 17 to 21 is a really important age group that is often neglected or ignored. And I think if players go in too early to first team football, where the coach is too adamant about functionality and making sure that they just stick to the system and do the basics, then you're going to lose a lot of players' development. You know, Wenger, I think, would be a perfect bridge between an academy and the pro game. And I think actually he's kind of doing that at Arsenal as like a kind of an in between. You know, he's doing a really good job of coming forth. He's really, really good job of pushing players up, but he's actually not really doing what Arsenal first team should be doing, which is probably pushing on to the next level. But he's doing a very good job of pushing young players to maybe another level. You know, but I do think that they'd have to go to somewhere else to become world class or close to world class.
Hmm. Okay. Ife, you're a Chelsea fan and a valuable member of the Mu cult.
Yeah, okay.
I'm playing. Who would you say is a better developer of players? Would it be Mourinho or would it be Wenger?
It depends on age.
Take it from different age groups.
I'd probably say teens. So from the teens, from early teens to late teens.
Say the 17 to 21.
Yeah, I'd probably say from 16 to about 19, 20, I'd probably say Wenger is probably the better of the two. But after that, when they actually start getting first team experience, when they finally start getting exposed to the important games and the big games, you know, I think Jose is the one that will take you on to a different level. Like Mesut Ozil, he's a perfect example. Came from Bremen, although he was brilliant at Bremen. He was playing under Jose, Jose really kicked him. He kicked on under Jose. Same with Sami Khedira, kicked on under Jose. Varane, another example of a young player who was just coming out of his teens and started getting game time, and he displaced Pepe. And he started to get, he was understanding the tactical element of the game, and as he's a defender, you know, it was just a lot more, well, I think for Jose, I think it was a lot easier to kind of school him in, or particularly with Jose's style of play in terms of being solid at the back, very solid at the back, trying not to expose his back four. So Varane's again, I'd probably say he's a different type of player because he's the special player because he's very quick, very athletic, very strong, and I think the tactical side of his game has been developed by Jose.
Mm.
So I don't think he would be a great player under Wenger if he was under Jose at that particular moment in time where Jose joined Madrid and got Varane. I don't think he would be the player he is if Wenger was manager at that point.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
Okay. Does anyone have anything else to add on to Ife's point there?
Week, and I said, you know, when they moved to Arsenal, these guys were like the most, some of the most highly rated defenders in the continent, and you know, they displayed, well, Sandros more so displayed that potential in the Champions League in 2006, Giroud in bits and, you know, bits and bobs, but because obviously the way Wenger sets up his teams, and maybe he's not so much a strong coach for young defenders,
yeah,
you know, they declined. I want to put Varane in that category. I think Varane's the type of defender he would excel anywhere, personally speaking, anyway. I think what Mourinho did do, and it's ironic because that's what, you know, Wenger kind of is a champion for, is I think he gave Varane a platform to do it. And, you know, you still need to be a quality, I wouldn't say so much a coach, but I still think you have to be a quality manager. I think in terms of giving players platforms, I think that's more of a management skill. And I think that's what he displayed with Varane. So that's what I would like to see more from Mourinho. I think he's kind of proven that, you know what, I can win. And I think it's likely that he can prove he can win in a different way. I think that's, me personally speaking as an individual, I think that's what I probably will rate Mourinho. Like, for me, he's probably my second most influential modern coach, so I do rate him. But where I had that kind of difference is, you know, just the way he went about it. And I think if he managed to do what he's looking to do with this current Chelsea team, I think he would have said, you know what, I can win. I can win in a variety of ways. But now, you know, it's that, can I really raise a team? Which would be great to see. Not really, no. That's a lie, because that would mean successful. But you know, you understand what I mean. Like, from a coaching perspective,
yeah, of course.
You know, it would be pretty impressive.
Mm. Matt, if I was to ask you to stick your head on the line, in terms of developing players from 21 and upwards, who is the best developer? Sorry, who has the most influence in developing a player in terms of managers? Across the world,
the best developer of players.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a probably. I mean, Mourinho, you'd have to put up there, because what he does consistently is produce top teams and top players. You know, but however, 21-year-olds aren't really his remit. In fairness, Guardiola's probably the one who seems to have the knack. However, although he's been around, it seems forever. He hasn't been that long around to really judge him well enough to say he's the best. However, he's consistently seems to be producing very good players and improving them again and again, because, like I said before, he's got a very modern and progressive outlook on the game. So I think
Matt,
a lot of the
your question.
Yeah.
Now's your question. Do you think Pedro, and especially Sergio Busquets, would have been as good as they are had it not been for Guardiola?
We wouldn't even know who they are if it wasn't for Guardiola. You know, I think back to the Messi example, they were very fortunate to have had him as their coach, who gave them the education in the Barca B team, and then also gave them, you know, and having the role then to go into the first team, and then brought them with him. Again, a Mourinho would not have even considered them. And again, this is the thing about youth development. The opportunities and the windows of opportunity and that kind of luck and fortune, and it's so small for players, you know. I mean, you really have got to be very lucky to come across at the right time the right coach who believes in you. And so, and it goes, and this happens in the first team level as well. I mean, Diego Costa is probably a good example of a player who found a coach in Simeone who completely loved everything that he offered, whereas before he was just a journeyman who couldn't seem to get focused, or no one seemed to like him. But he, in Simeone, he found a man who really related to him. So then he built the team around him. He made him better. He made him into a world class forward. That opportunity doesn't happen to every player. You know, Kagawa is a good example of a player who at Dortmund was loved by the fans and the coach, and given the platform to go and prove himself. At United, he didn't have that, because he didn't have the. There was too many players in that position. He wasn't really the main man. He wasn't really loved, and again he dropped off. You know, and that opportunity, and that for Pedro and Busquets, the fortune that they had to have him for that one season at that time for their careers was completely, I mean, that what they've won since then is remarkable. But that's because it's really down to luck, really. I mean, obviously, and from that, they impress, they do well, all their skills come out. I mean, Busquets, if he had come across another coach who wasn't Guardiola, he probably wouldn't have seen any value in Busquets. But Guardiola saw exactly the type of player that he was himself, and so then used him the way he wanted him to be worked. I mean, Guardiola revolutionised midfield play at Barcelona. You know, before that, it was your very athletic, dominant midfielders in your Essien types who were brilliant, and I loved Essien. But Guardiola changed midfield play, really, until Germany have now redefined it again. But the influence he had was massive. But for those players, that influence that he gave on them changed their whole career span. You know, I mean, and the amount of players, like I said about Messi earlier, the amount of players that could have been like Messi, he's probably so big. But their actual opportunity to become that is so small that it's very hard to. I mean, when people say, "Well, what's the perfect player?" You can't control someone's pathway. But fortune and opportunity and timing are all massive parts of it. And Guardiola has just been a kind of right place, right time for some players, and they progress from that. But yeah, it's to try and kind of you can never guarantee someone's development pathway, you know. But sometimes if it goes well, and everything falls into place, and you've got yourself a real opportunity from there. The key, though, for a young player's lesson is to just always be working hard, so that any opportunity that comes up, you embrace it. You know, you get too many players who sulk and waste away instead of actually just constantly trying to improve themselves. And that's why your Ronaldo types, who are always trying to be better, are great examples for young players, because if an opportunity comes up, they're ready for it. But that's the lesson for the young kids who are listening.
Fantastic. Mariah. Just to talk about someone new, Brendan Rodgers gets some plaudits, some critics. Would you say that he has proven himself as a key influence on a player's development yet, or do you think that he still has some way to go?
I like what he's done with Sterling. Something I'm interested to see, because now he's lost Suarez, maybe one of the 5-10 best players in the world. So this Liverpool team is a team in transition, and he has a few big decisions to make. He bought young players, quite a few young players who will need his guidance, and that means they may. We're talking about teams going backwards to go forwards. They may struggle to get back into the top four this season, but looking forward, they may be set for the next 5-7 years if he brings the players on correctly. I think he's got a big decision to make in terms of dropping Steven Gerrard and giving some of the younger midfielders that he's bought a chance to play. I think Gerrard's best days are firmly behind him now. But I like what he's done with, obviously, Raheem Sterling. I think Sturridge was a player who just needed a platform. He took a gamble with Sturridge and it's paid off. He's taken another gamble with Balotelli. But I think nobody's ever seen anybody quite like Mario, who just seems to live in his own world. I mean, he's been managed by some of the best and the biggest managers in the world, and no one's been able to bring him along yet. It's early days, but we'll see with Rodgers. He's got a lot to prove. I think, like Matt was talking about luck, I think last season everything kind of came together for him. He had Suarez, who had one of the best individual seasons I think I've ever seen in the Premiership. He had the fact that they were only playing once a week, so he had a week to set up tactically. His team were refreshed every week, fresher most of the time than the team they were playing. Also, they were kind of under the radar last season, Liverpool. They kind of had the, oh yeah, it's just Liverpool, you know, but this season teams are happy to sit deep, play hard for 90 minutes and go away from Anfield with a point, or even Liverpool play them and have a point. So we'll see how it goes for him. He has to evolve again, because now he's facing the kind of defences that big teams face. When you're a big team, teams will sit back and they're happy to take a point from you. And last season he just had the run of the pitch where his teams could just go out, blaze teams, run them out of the ground in the first 20-30 minutes. So we'll see how good he really is. But I respect him. You can see he never plays the same tactics game in, game out, depending on who you plays. He just adjusts his midfield a little bit. So I've got faith in him. He's a student of the game. he believes in young players. So yeah, I think in the long term he'll prove himself. But yeah, it's going to be a big next few years for Brendan, in my opinion.
Mm. Matt, do you have any thoughts around Brendan Rodgers?
Around Brendan Rodgers, I mean, I think last year he really impressed. I was dubious about him when he first came in, only because I think he was a bit more, a very purist in his philosophy. I think when you compare him to Wenger, they're very similar. They want to play attacking football. They want to dominate games. They want to score a lot of goals. However, they always seem to have an Achilles heel, which is the defence. Last year they got away with it because they scored so many, which was great, for the team, and they did really well from it. But the defence ultimately kind of cost them. You know, you look at the Palace game at the end. I think Chelsea did a real number on him. I think Mourinho was just phenomenal what he did in that game, because he just completely nullified any threats that they had. I think Rodgers is a very good, again, like a Wenger, gives a young player a platform to go and develop. Raheem Sterling's really impressed, and I would say Rodgers has done a very good job of him tactically, because Raheem Sterling looks so intelligent as a footballer, whether that was from his upbringing at QPR or obviously what he's been doing at Liverpool. But he clearly looks like a very intelligent player, as well as a very quick and technical player. I do think, though, that he's made a massive error with Balotelli. I think this is going to be his downfall as a coach this season. And it might end up defining his managerial career. I think it was a desperate move, because he needed a forward, couldn't get his targets, and this was the attainable option. But there's a reason that he was available. No one else wanted him, and he was 16 million. You know, because unfortunately, Balotelli is a problem. I think he's an excellent footballer. He's not a very good team player, and he doesn't suit a system that Rodgers last season worked well, which was fast attacking football in transition. Balotelli slows the game down to his own pace, does his own stuff, and he must be a nightmare to play with, especially with a team who relies on positive, you know, deep runs to penetrate the defence. And Balotelli just is not working at all. People might say it's early days, but it just doesn't look like it's going to be the same Liverpool. Now, whether Rodgers can adapt to that and obviously improve and build the team around Balotelli, but I think it'll take away some of what made Liverpool so good last year. However, they do look defensively worse this year. Lovren, 20 million, does not look like a 20 million player. Mignolet still got a lot of questions over him. Sacco looks very naive at the back, awful with the ball. So for a team who likes to play out with the front and back, I think Sacco looks so nervous when he plays. So really, I don't know if Rodgers has really addressed the issue. And again, Gerrard is a major problem that's becoming more of a compounding issue each game, as he continually can't seem to cover the ground needed, especially with more games now. But Rodgers obviously cannot just drop him, because it's Gerrard and he's untouchable, and it becomes a very big issue for Rodgers, because I'm sure he can see the issues there, and I'm sure he'd like to move on from him. But until Gerrard decides to do that, I think Rodgers is going to have an issue. So for me, it was perfect last year for him. Everything went well, everyone was loving it. Now he's got proper issues to deal with. This will be a real test of his management.
Mm. Yeah. I just want to pose one final question to you guys before we move on to some listeners' questions. It's just a hypothetical question that I've just made up right now, so forgive me. If we was to take someone, name a 16-year-old talent that is around right now.
Colquitt.
Who's Colquitt? Who? Who's he play for?
He still plays in Norway.
What's his name?
Martin Odegaard. ODEGAARD.
Okay, Martin Odegaard. We'll take him because no one's ever heard of him. So, I certainly haven't. Anyway, if we take him as an example, what manager in the Premier League would you trust the most? So you say he's 16, Mickey, right?
Yeah, 15, 16.
So what Premier League manager would you trust the most to take him to their club and make the best out of his career? So by the time he reaches 30, he would have... what manager do you think would have taken him to the heights to maximise his potential? Brendan Rodgers for Mickey.
Ooh, let me think.
Van Gaal for me.
Van Gaal. Matt.
I was going to actually go back and say Martinez.
I want to say Martinez, but I wouldn't be confident with him having him for his whole career.
So I'm talking about all aspects here. So I'm obviously talking about the ages from 16 to 21, and then where he progresses from 21 to obviously 25 as well. So I'm not just talking about the first aspect of the development here. I think that's a pretty good question, if I do say myself.
where does he play? Where does he play?
Number 10.
Definitely not Jose.
I think with Wenger, you're guaranteed a good player, but I'm talking about maximising his potential, so...
Yeah.
I mean, I think Van Gaal, I think if you look at Alaba, you look at Schweinsteiger right now, you look at these players who Van Gaal has had an influence on, Xavi, Iniesta, Puyol, you know, you think of Van Gaal's influence on young players. You know, again, go back to Ajax, look at David, Seedorf, you know, there's a lot of players that Van Gaal has had a massive influence on. And if he can have that kind of influence at United, then these young players will really make a massive progression under him. Van Gaal's a bit of an interesting enigma because I think for the last 10 years he hasn't really been in the forefront of the, you know, the spotlight. But he's a great developer of talent, you know, and he seems to have a great eye for young players, and a wish to develop young players. Not just he's probably got the best blend between a Mourinho and a Wenger in regards to young players, but then pushing them tactically as well, which is probably why Guardiola and Mourinho have had such an influence under him as a coach as well. You know, his influence has actually, in the last 20 years of football, is probably one of the strongest out of any other person when you look at the influence he's had on the players and coaches in the modern game.
Okay. Mariah, why you said Martinez, right? Well, actually, you and Mickey both said Martinez, so why Martinez?
Martinez, I'm hesitant because I feel that with players, they respond, they like coaches with pedigree. Like, you can't help it. Like, I'm going to listen more to Pep Guardiola than I am going to listen to Martinez. They might be telling me exactly the same thing, but Pep Guardiola's got the pedigree, he's got the titles, he's got the... He can say, go and look at Messi, go and look at Iniesta, go and look at Götze, go and look at... He can name world-class players and say, I coach them. While Martinez, who would Martinez mention? If you...
That's what I was going to say. Like, in terms of evidence, what do you have to base it on? But obviously, you don't have to just base it on evidence. It's just what you see from him currently.
I tip him to become a top coach. So, yeah, I'd give it to Martinez and just cross my fingers.
Mickey, what about yourself? No, I'm talking about from basically maximising his whole potential.
Yeah, because one thing that Van Gaal seems to do well, he seems to make players met on top of educating them. So I think what Mourinho does really well when it comes to developing players and making them met is really strengthening the resolve and, you know, fostering hard work, ethic, determination, resilience, whilst I think other coaches on the other end of the spectrum, they further develop tactical understanding, whilst I think Van Gaal is a nice mixture too. I think Guardiola obviously doesn't be valid because he's not a championship manager, but I think he's the closest sense where I feel he advances players tactically but also makes them ready for the big occasion. You know, Pedro just gets, you know, big examples. I think Van Gaal, in terms of the premiership,
okay, cool. We'll leave that debate there then, and we'll move on to some listeners' questions. So I'll thank you beforehand for all your questions because we have got quite a lot, so I'm not sure we'll be able to get through all of them. Does anyone have any they want to ask before
I... Can I go first? Because
yeah. Give them a shout out as well, yeah?
Obviously, I'll tell them to do it, sorry. Roy Keane right in saying there's too
Matt, do you want to take that first, and then we'll just go
yeah,
through?
Yeah, I think Roy Keane, anything talking about managers and anything that really seems to bring up Alex Ferguson is an issue. So as soon as it becomes a Ferguson thing, it becomes a negative for Keane. So he'll always say that Brian Clough was massive for him, and obviously whatever him may happen with Ferguson seems to just deny anything, any influence as such. But unfortunately, the way the game is, and players are soldiers and managers are generals, really, and that's kind of how it is. And I think managers are massive in the game. I don't think you can just have player influences and say that the manager didn't have any impact. The managers who don't make impact tend to be the ones who don't succeed. You know, if you look at the top level, the managers are the ones who, you know, are in control, are the ones who are dominant, the ones who educate the players, who bring the team together. These are the ones who are massive, and that's why they get a lot of the flack when it doesn't go well, and obviously probably not as much credit maybe when it does go well, because players tend to get that from them. But the manager really is the one who brings it all together, who sets the environment, who produces the team, who sets out their, you know, strategy from it. And if without them doing that, I don't feel that the players would just be kind of lost a little bit. You know, it's kind of like turning up for your Sunday league game and kind of just deciding what you're going to do together in a huddle. You need someone sometimes to kind of give you a leadership, and I don't think you can take Roy Keane's ideas on management as they are, because he's got too many interest and hatred towards Ferguson. Ferguson's influence at Man U proved how important a manager is to kind of keep a team stable, successful, committed, disciplined, focused. Without Ferguson, Man U would not be the team they are now, and Keane is showing a bit of a disrespect towards him by saying the things he is, but he's got his own interests or his own problems about that. But no, managers are massive for me. Obviously, players are key. If you've got a great player, if you've got great coaches and great players, you can have a great team. But if you've got a great manager and average players, you'll probably produce something pretty good from it as well.
Agreed.
Ife?
Spot on. I mean, Keane, he just seems like a very angry man at the minute. but personally, I think managers don't tend to get enough credit when it goes good. I think of all managers, I think Jose's probably the one that gets the most credit. Even if it's nothing spectacular, like, he gets the most credit, and that's because he puts a lot of the weight on his shoulders, and that's in terms of everything. I mean, anything negative, he will shoulder it with regards to his team. He will shoulder it. So I think it's just if he gets credit, whereas some managers, like Wenger, they always tend to shy away from difficulty. I don't think he's a type of manager that will shoulder any blame. I think he tends to blame others a lot of the time for his failings, whereas Jose, I think he shoulders it. Although we say he's got a blame culture, and he does more moan like most managers do, but I think he is probably one of the few that gets a lot of plaudits. And that's no surprise, because he takes gamble. Same with Brendan Rodgers. I mean, he takes chances, and that's why he gets a lot of credit. Same with Martinez. He gets a lot of credit because he takes chances. Same with Guardiola. All these managers that take chances tend to be the ones that get the praise, and I think it's just. So I don't really respect what Keane is saying, because it's false, in my opinion. I don't rate it at all. I don't agree. I definitely don't agree. Especially
because
I want Jose as my manager.
Mariah, Mickey, do you have anything else to add on?
Take anything he says seriously, because it's always like Matt and Ife both said, it's just a dig at
Fergie, so yeah.
There's always some sort of agenda behind it.
Why is he managing then if managers don't do anything, man? He might as well just chill and retire and just enjoy his life, man. But yeah, definitely 100% disagree with what he meant.
Mickey?
Yeah, I think you guys have kind of covered the points I was going to make. I mean, obviously, as a coach and as an aspiring manager myself, I'm going to disagree because I like to think that, you know, managers have a considerable influence over not just the performance of a team, but I think also in terms of the individual. I believe that when a player is young, it's about teaching the foundations and really developing the base of his game, tactical and technical. But I think, well, it gets to the point where he should actually have that down pat. It really becomes about managing. It's about managing in a sense of instilling discipline, instilling resolve, instilling you know, the constant desire to be better, you know, a culture of excellence. And that doesn't, that stems from not come from players, that stems from the managers really create a culture of excellence and it not nothing being enough. You know, so again, my voice the same opinion, and I feel like I can't remember a successful team, and by being successful I don't mean, you know, Chelsea 2012 Champions League successful, where, you know, Di Matteo, I'm talking about a legacy. I can't think of a team that lacked that sort of manager. Every dominant team that I can think of have always had a manager that defines that, or at the very least, go back even further to maybe, you know, from Shaka to Paisley, from Michels to Kovac, you know, they at least they have coaches that maybe not have been dominant in terms of carrying on that legacy, but they still facilitated it in a way. You would hear, you know, the Ajax players from the era, the Liverpool players from the era say, you know, the guys that took over, they still facilitated, they still taught them, the influence was still there. So the manager is always integral.
Yeah. Okay. Does anyone else have any other questions before I shoot through mine?
Yeah, I've got a question here.
Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it a lot, and I look forward to listening to the rest of the pod.
All right. Cheers.
See you later.
Go on, Mara.
Yeah, I've got a question from Aliqua Scriptor. We all know him, Elijah. His question is, can creativity and vision be coached into a player? So I think that's more in your kind of avenue, man.
Creativity and vision, absolutely. A lot of it is, I mean, creativity tends to be about denying the players their freedom to try things, you know. So obviously coaches who restrict players from the freedom to express themselves, to try new things, will tend to reduce a player's creativity. However, also helping a player's development in regards to their technical foundation, to give them a broad sense of a skill set, will give them more freedom to be creative. You know, if you just limit a player to one thing, then he's not going to be able to be creative when the time needs to be able to do other things. So the key though is to build the foundation of a player, to give them a broad skill set, then also give them to the freedom to express themselves and be creative from it. Vision's a different thing. Vision is about awareness, and I think it does have a sight, there's an area of intelligence needed to it. You can build on, you know, practices that improve players' awareness, checking shoulders, knowing what's around them. But I think there's a vision aspect does seem to be maybe a natural, more genetic thing, because it tends to become more of a mental aspect of their understanding of their space, their vision to see ahead. The best players are the best, you know, with the best vision. You know, whether you can do that into games, if you look at the Barcelona, the model, the Dutch model of small-sided games, the more that they play games that are obviously related to the game, the better their decisions should become, you know. But some players still struggle to make good decisions anyway in those environments. So some players are more intelligent than others, and they might understand the game more. That'll improve their vision and hopefully improve their effectiveness in games. But then you'll get some who are intelligent but lack the skill set to obviously put those things into practice. So the key though is to try and get the balance between the two. The key for me though is not to coach things out of players, is not to give them the answers, is not to tell them where to go, because then it just makes them very robotic in regards to what they do with the ball and how they think. If you give them more freedom to express, they'll see things that maybe a coach wouldn't have seen. But coaches are very inclined to kind of get involved and tell players what they should have done, instead of maybe ask them why they did that, or what could you have done better, or did you see these options, or why did you make that choice? By doing that, the player then thinks and evaluates and reflects and hopefully builds up a better picture in their head. But it's a complex development, which is youth coaching, you know, for football. Unfortunately, there's very uneducated people working with a lot of young players, which is hampering a lot of their potential, which it always baffles me to think that we put such kind of amateur people with maybe our most promising players, you know, without us realising it, and then we wonder why we have a void of players. So there are concerns there that we need to improve on. But educating creativity and vision, which I think are massive, needs to be really taken care of more with coaches and what they do in their environments.
Okay. Interesting stuff. Ife, do you have anything you want to add on there?
I think this question, it seems like this is a kind of question that kind of relates to Jordan and Henderson. I don't know why, but it feels like this is a question related to Jordan Henderson. And I think, yes, you can coach. Definitely creativity. That can come. But I think that comes at a very young age. In terms of vision, I think it's hard to say. I don't think you can necessarily teach it, but I think you can definitely open a player's mind up to thinking, okay, there's more to like a simple pass. You don't need to just play the simple pass. You don't have to be safe all the time. You know, some players can see the pass but pick the safe option, if you understand what I mean. And Henderson is the type, he was that type of player. Like before, he used to play just a safe pass because he was too scared to, you know, make the decision because he'd get stick. You know, he wasn't Liverpool fans' favourite player before he even kicked on under Rodgers. So I think Brendan Rodgers has kind of given him the confidence within to play more than just a simple pass. So I think that can be coached. I definitely think, but that's more of a confidence thing rather than, I think it's more of a confidence thing rather than an actual technical aspect of coaching. I think it's more your coach believing in you to do. I don't think all footballers are stupid. I don't think all footballers are stupid. I would have thought Henderson's quite dopey and quite very silly, but he seems like an intelligent footballer under Rodgers.
Okay. Well, before I just ask another listener question, there was a debate going on TalkSport the other night, and essentially it was, who is England's best midfielder? So we're going to talk about who's currently available, so no Gerrard or Lampard. Who would you guys say is England's best midfielder? Because there was a lot of Henderson responses, and I just can't have that. Yeah, Carrick's available, isn't he?
Yeah, okay, I'd say Carrick. And after him, I'd probably say Milner and then Henderson. But the reason why I say Henderson, not because...
Are you saying Henderson's better than Wilshere?
Not because of his ability, but hey, not because of his ability. It's more because of what he brings to the table at this current moment in time. And then again, Wilshere has been in incredible form, so... Well, not incredible, good form, so... it's a toss-up between Wilshere and Henderson. That depends on the team that you're playing.
Okay. Matt, what about yourself?
Yeah, right now, James Milner. I think he's proven himself at City how good he is. I still don't think he's convinced a lot of people. People seem to think that he's just this workhorse who just runs around a lot, but he's intelligent, he's good with the ball, he's disciplined with what he does. You know, he's exactly what we need for England's midfield. Carrick would have been perfect for the last 5 to 6 years. You know, he would have been ideal in that position. Fortunately, now he probably is just beyond his best, you know, to have him as a real pivot. But he was so good for Man U, and if we just used him the same way for England, we might have actually done better with him. Moving forward, though, I think Oxlade-Chamberlain's got all the aspects to be a box-to-box complete midfielder, you know, on your same levels as your Schweinsteigers and your Vidals, in my opinion. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain's got everything that he could need. He just needs to be given the platform to go and develop those skills, you know, and hopefully Arsenal's the place for him to do that. I like universal players, I like to develop players all over, but Chamberlain probably plays far too wide, more than he should. I think he's brilliant through the middle, and I think he needs to play there more. Obviously, his problem at Arsenal is there's about 20 midfielders who play in that position, you know, so it's going to be difficult for him. However, I think Milner, Henderson and Oxlade-Chamberlain are probably our three best midfielders for the future. I'm still not sold on Wilshere, I'm sorry. I think he's a talented player, but I just don't see... I see too much of maybe a Gerrard in him, and I just think that the game's moved away from that type of player. I think discipline in midfield is massive, and I think Liverpool benefited from that last year with a midfield of Jordan Henderson, you know, playing in there, even with a Joe Allen. They're not exactly superstars looking kind of players, but they do very good jobs in the midfield, and that probably sounds a bit functional, but I think that's important for our midfielders to have. You look at Modric and Di Maria last year for Madrid, they were massive for Madrid's success. You know, they're both very good players who are capable of doing different things, but their discipline was the key part of it, and I think that's a major thing that Wilshere needs to add to his game.
Mario, please save Wilshere.
Well, you asked me to do it now. I was going to do it anyway, but now it looks like you coerced
me. I'll edit this part out.
Henderson is, and he's been very good for about 12-18 months now, can't ignore that. There's only so good you can be if your ability is not at the highest level. So let me say, like, an 8 out of 10 performance from Henderson might equate to a 6 out of 10 performance for Jack Wilshere, just in terms of what they can actually do on the pitch. So long term, I'm going to go with Wilshere, and hopefully in a year or two, you'll make me look like a genius. So yeah, Jack Wilshere.
I second that opinion. Okay, I've got another one from Elijah, actually. Did he ask two questions, maybe?
I'm going to have to go, unfortunately, guys, because I'm being harassed by the wife to go. So it's, otherwise, I'm just going to have it in my ear all the time.
No worries.
I appreciate our time together again. Hopefully, we get to do it soon. Look forward to hearing this. Hopefully, it's been another good one.
Yep, cheers, mate.
Cheers, guys. All the best, yeah.
Thanks. All right, bye. Yeah, I've got another one from Elijah. He asks, what type of midfielder do you consider Carrick and Arteta to be?
Okay, the reason he's discussing this, because we talked about it the other day, I was complaining about Blind. Carrick is, I call them deep line playmakers. So they're the deepest midfielder, but in terms of the defensive side of the job, I'm not expecting them to do much of it. They're like the same type of players as Pirlo. So, yeah, deep line playmakers, I describe them as. And to get the best out of them, you've got to put them with one or two guys who are going to do the running for them and do the defensive work for them. But you just let them set that platform where they set the tempo and they just dictate play from deep. So, yeah, deep line playmakers, both of them.
FA, what about yourself?
I agree, they're definitely deep line playmakers. They don't do much tackling, but they do the reading of the game. So they're the type of players that will read the passes or try and do a lot of the interceptions. But players like Carrick, very intelligent. Very, very intelligent. So Arteta, I don't know.
Ife hasn't been a fan of Arteta for a while.
Yeah, I think he's just a midfielder that happens to play across the Arsenal midfield, to be honest.
Okay. There's a question here. Actually, let me just address it. Keegan AFC, I think we've kind of developed the pros and cons to an approach of Wenger's and Mourinho, so thanks for your question. But I think Matt kind of covered that. What else do we have? Junior asks, how much truth do you think is behind Raymond Verheyen's claims about training methods causing injuries?
He seems like another one that's got, you know,
like a Roy Keane, isn't it?
Like an issue, yeah, an issue with a lot of people. But stuff like that. So it's a funny one. I think he does have, he does hold some truth. Even with Roy Keane, I mean, in some instances, some managers do get a lot more credit than they deserve. But, you know, it seems like a lot of what he says, no matter how, in spite of it being partly true, it seems to be filled with some form of hidden agenda. So you don't tend to take it as seriously as you perhaps should.
Is he actually employed?
No, he isn't.
Not anymore.
I always have to ask myself this question. Why does he not have a job?
I think he might... You know, Dutch people, they tend to have chips on their shoulders. And, you know, we always hear about arguments in the Dutch camp and they seem to have fiery tempers. That might be the issue.
I would love him to come to Arsenal, you know, because the thing is, if he could fix our problems, then fine, so be it. But then if the same things persist, then maybe he would just shut up. Do you know what I mean?
He tends to tweet after the fact.
Yeah,
as well.
It's easy to do that, isn't it?
Yeah, make more predictions rather than wait for somebody to injure, then go on your rant about Man United. Yeah,
but then again, he didn't predict that Ramsey would get injured again. He did predict that Walsh would get injured again. So, to be fair, he has made predictions. And
yeah, but Ramsey and Walsh should be getting injured their whole careers, so it's not really a...
No, but the fact that they've been rushed back is the reason why they're getting injured. And, well, Ramsey was definitely because he got rushed back. He's got the same injury, so
I don't think Ramsey's been rushed back.
Well, Ramsey's got the same injury. He's got.
But Ramsey had the whole summer off.
No, well, in terms of football, competitive football, I think he was rushed back last season.
Oh, last season he was probably rushed back. Yeah.
Last season he was rushed back.
But we were in desperate need. We were getting smacked like 6-0 and 3-0 by Everton. So. Yeah, we kind of have to. Well, yeah, not good for Ramsey, but...
He's definitely... has a point, because he does a lot of speaking gigs, so he's somebody who's respected within his field. But, yeah, I'd like to...
Is he respected in his field, or is it because he's controversial? That he gets a lot of speaking gigs?
I think it's because he's respected in his field, but, of course, I'm not there, so... Obviously, there's only so much I can attest to that. But, yeah, I'm like you. I'd like to actually see him go to United or go to Arsenal and transform our medical department, because it's easy to talk when, you know, we give the big talk when you're not actually in a job.
Yeah.
Let's see you actually go there and do it yourself.
Of course.
Yeah, definitely has a point.
Of course. I've got one that you might fancy, Mariah, from Van Chosen One. He asks, what are your thoughts on Man United facing FFP sanctions from UEFA over their rumoured £350 million debt? Is there any substance to this story, or...?
I've glanced over it earlier today, but I didn't read it in full because I was a bit busy. But how do I feel about it? It's a bit annoying. This has always been the problem with the Glazers. They've come in and bought the club and just put this big debt on top of the club's name, basically. But they've serviced it quite well. Well, when Fergie was still managing and we were winning titles and had a healthy stream of, obviously, money coming in, all that kind of stuff, it looked like the debt will be paid off in the next 20, 30 years. So, right, I think it would be a bit of a mistake if we got a fine for the debt. But I could understand £350 million is not small money, you know. We're spending like, you know, just spending like no one's business. So, yeah, I can see where the fine comes from, but I'm a bit pissed where the fine... Basically, Glazers, right? They're the ones who put the fine there in the first, the debt there in the first place. So
go support FC United of Manchester if you're that upset.
What'd you say?
So go support FC United of Manchester if you're that upset.
I think I'll stick with my team. I think whatever the fine is, it'll end up just being a slap on the wrist to us anyway. You know how we do it over there. So,
the money men. Okay, I think we got, say, one more question from Pharaoh T. He asks, do we see... I think we've done this question before, actually.
Yes, on my timeline as well. I've decided not to ask, and we've pretty much gone through that. Thanks for the question, though, Pharaoh.
Yeah, but your one was about future top manager, was it?
Yeah.
Well, just say your opinion anyway. The question was, do we see any current players as future top managers? I'm sure we've been through this before on a previous pod.
I don't think so. I've not heard that, but current players. As top managers.
I'm going to go with Arteta, just for my club. He would be. Drogba.
I'd say Drogba. I was going to say.
Really? You would say Drogba?
Sure.
I think Drogba would get a team relegated.
Yeah, I think Drogba would be a great manager, to be honest.
Nowadays,
Lampard.
I think Lampard could do any kind of job. He's very intelligent as well. He was an intelligent player when he's still playing now. And he's someone who's respected as well. Lampard would stand out to me as well. It's tough because. Obviously, the tactic side is important, but let's say you're watching somebody like Thomas Muller. Like, is his understanding of the game enough that he's good at understanding his own movement and what he should do, or is his understanding so advanced that he knows how to teach a whole team,
Yeah, it's different. It's different kind of skill set from what you see on the TV and what you know in person as well. So
you can start listing players like Xavi and.
They're all intelligent players, but it doesn't necessarily mean they could teach other people their intelligence.
It's a difficult one.
Yeah.
You want someone who's a natural leader as well, so it's a balance of two things.
Because you would have thought Roy Keane would have been a fantastic manager, you know?
No, I wouldn't have.
You wouldn't have?
No, he's overboard with his intensity. He's a madman. He's gone out there and ended someone's career, man.
True.
He's a bit too overboard with his intensity.
He's a Man United legend, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a Man United legend.
Fuck.
Yeah,
ridiculous, mate. Ridiculous.
He's one of the greatest midfielders this league has ever seen, mate. So I can understand why he's
Yeah, Patrick Vieira beat him up anyway, so
that's cool. He'll cry himself to sleep with his trophies, you know.
Yeah, and Vieira's got trophies as well, mate.
Yeah.
He's got a World Cup, mate. How about that, yeah? He won the World Cup with Arsenal, mate.
Vieira.
Some players that, especially when you spend such a long time at a club, the pinnacle is to win it with the club that you've been affiliated with for such a long time. It's that feeling.
If it really was the pinnacle for Thierry Henry, then maybe he would have stayed at Arsenal and tried to win it with Arsenal. But if that was the real pinnacle, then maybe he would have stayed.
No, but he wanted to win. You know, you can't have everything you want in life, so he wanted to keep.
You have to address it.
Yeah,
possibly.
You just have to. You thought it was time to move on anyway.
Possibly. Yeah. Anyway, I've just got a little shout out here. Tim J. B. Haag. I think he tweeted this when we scored, something about Borat Sagdiev scored from Kazakhstan or something. So, yeah. I love Borat, so we have to give him a shout out for that. So thank you for all your questions. Thank you to Matt and Mickey, who aren't with us right now. They're gone somewhere appeasing their women or something. Ife and Mariah, thank you for staying for the rest of the journey, and we will see you next week.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers.